Oh,
go.
listeners, we're talking about one of our most favorite products, actually. We're going to be talking to Gabriela Jimenez, the company is Tonino, which somehow registered my head as Italian, but in fact it's not. It's Costa Rican, according to Gabriela. Is that correct, Gabriela?
Exactly. We are a Costa Rican company. We are a tuna packer, and when we decided to design a new product line for the U.S. market, we inspired ourselves with the Mediterranean way of cooking tuna and delivering flavor in a shelf-stable tuna jar. So that's why we decided to go on with Tonino, which means little tuna, baby tuna.
It does,
in
indeed. In Italian as well. Yeah. Now, are you from Costa Rica?
Yes.
I
Yes, I
see.
am from Costa Rica, and our facility is in the coastline of Costa Rica.
Great.
Wow.
We have a friend who's married to somebody from Costa Rica. Anyhow, you've been making news lately, Costa Rica,
Yeah.
huh? I guess everybody is. It's become a daily event. Everybody making news. Here's what I want to know. As I told you, I happen to love your jarred tuna, and I had it way back when. I should have looked up the date, but we did an interview of it a long time ago, and it's very special. And I wanted to know if you could tell us how the company started, what's the backstory. Why is it so different and special?
Okay, so our company started like 55 years ago. We started packing tuna, and Costa Rica is one of the highest tuna consumers in the world. So we are number
Man.
four country in the world eating tuna. So just the Japanese, the Italian, and the Spanish consume more tuna than us. So we started to innovate in different approaches. So we started using actual vegetables in our cans and different recipes so that people in Costa Rica could start using tuna as a center plate meal or as a complete meal ready to eat. When we decided to go to the European and American markets, then we saw what was on the market in those places, especially in the States, and we decided that to be successful, we should innovate, we should be disruptive, and we should approach the market with a proposal that was different. And that's when we, doing the research, got inspiration from the Mediterranean way of cooking tuna. And we decided to put it into a glass jar so that people could actually see what they were buying. And we decided to use olive oil as a foundation so that we can keep the flavor. And we decided to use yellowfin tuna, which is a it's a tropical water fish that it's a little bit more fatty and keeps the moisture and the silkiness of the meat intact when you cook it and when you put it in olive oil.
So there are good reasons why I found it so exceptional, right? I mean, it's a
Yeah.
long ways from the kind of stuff you get in a tin.
Exactly. The most important part and the difference, the big difference of Tonino, it's the way we cook our fish. We cook our fish with the bones and the skin so we can keep the integrity of the flesh and the loins, so that it can be, it gets juicy, it gets, the flavor is inside, all the acids and all the omega-3 and all the nutrients that are within the loin, they are kept within the loin because it doesn't dehydrate the most, because we have the skin there doing like a protection. After it's cooked, then we take the skin off and the bones off and get the loins and hand cut it and hand pack it into the jars. And then we put the olive oil and the other ingredients, and then we vacuum seal it. So it's all just in one process. So we keep all the moisture inside and the integrity of the meat.
Well, it's delicious. It's absolutely wonderful. I can't imagine how anybody could eat any other kind after tasting it. You know, it's really a far cry from what most people think of as canned tuna. Now, do you do anything besides tuna? I think I've only had tuna.
Excuse me?
I said, do you do anything besides tuna?
Well, right now, I'm glad you mentioned that, because we are launching right now salmon in a jar. We know that salmon is the second seafood species that is sold in the U.S., so it's one of the U.S. favorites. And it took us a while to get to the point where we were satisfied with what the quality of the salmon was bringing. So we just launched it in the Fancy Food Show this year in June. We launched these three different flavors in salmon. So it's salmon fillets in a jar. One, it's in extra virgin olive oil. The second one is rosemary and garlic. And the third one, it's veal. So it's, we try to mimic the most sold recipes in restaurants so that we can bring to U.S. consumers something you can have in your pantry and just set like a kind of pasta or rice or a rice bowl or whatever you would like as a starch to just get the salmon. It's already cooked, ready to eat, and you can have it right away.
Now, where do you fish the salmon?
The salmon that we are launching, it's Alaskan salmon. It's wild caught. It's not farmed. It's wild caught because you know that, Tomino, one of our biggest differentiators, too, is that we try to get the most sustainable approach into the raw material that we source from the sea or the rivers, or in this case with the salmon river and sea. So the salmon comes from Alaska, and it's wild caught.
Oh, really? We never got any of that. Is it hard to come by?
Well, it's already in our Amazon store. You can find it there, and in a while we are just starting distribution. So I think it's a matter of 4 or 5 months, you're going to see the salmon in different retailers all across the U.S.
Yes, as I told you before, I don't remember if we'd started recording or not, is I fell in love with the tuna, and then I couldn't find it. I couldn't order it. I mean, I don't know why it was so hard to lay hands on. I'm imagining now, which would be probably 5 years later, it's much more accessible, right?
Oh, yes. We are in more than 12,000 stores across the U.S. with our tuna items. We have a variety of 6-8 different flavors, from oregano to Thai chili to jalapeno, lemon and pepper, and you can find it in stores.
Oh, wow.
At Whole Foods, you can find it Publix, in Natural Independence. So we have, now you can find it even in Instacart. It can tell you exactly around you where you can find our product.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because that was my problem, is I couldn't find it. But now I guess you've expanded your marketing area, so that's encouraging. Can people order it off your website?
Not at our website, but you can order it at Walmart.com, at Amazon, in our store, front page, too. And through Instacart, you can get those products to your home, too.
Great. Was this your first participation of the Fancy Food Show?
No, we have been attending like in the last 2 years. Last year, we launched the albacore in a jar because since we are yellowfin, we know that there's a big portion of Americans that like the albacore, which is a cold water fish. It's something that you are used to because it's something that you have fished or harvested from your shores. So we wanted to please that segment of the market, too, and we developed 5 different recipes for the albacore in a jar. So you can find it in olive oil and water, or in 3 different flavors, Thai chili, that will be ginger, soy, herbs of Provence, and truffle oil.
Wow. It's really special, listeners. I mean, it really is. If you have to go to a little trouble to find it, it's worth it, much worth it. It has so little connection to what you're used to out of the supermarket aisle. Now, the competition in the tuna particularly, and probably the salmon too, has to be pretty stiff. I mean, how do you cope with the fact that it's a tight market?
Well, differentiation is what we try to bring, because we know that the market is very big and competitors are very big too. If you compare ourselves swimming in the same ocean as Starkies and Bumblebee. So what we do, we try to make things different. So right now, for example, with the cans or the tin fish that we are launching different flavors. So what we in with actual vegetables in it. So that's something that is different, because you can find the pouch, that it's another way of eating tuna because it has condiments and sauces. Or you can go to the regular tuna, which is the chunks in water or oil. So what we decided to approach the market with was something different. So we have options, for example, of cans in Walmart with tomato and olives. We have all the cans with chickpeas and carrots. So it's more like a ready-to-eat option that we are providing the market. So you just open the can. You still have a lot of meat in it. So it's a very healthy portion of protein, but also you have vegetables to go with. So you can just eat it from the can, or have some crackers, or accompany that with whatever you want. It's your heart is great in that moment, and that's the way we are trying to cope with all the innovation and things that is happening in the market.
So you have a good edge over some of your competitors because you have so many varieties in flavoring and in style of usage, right?
Yes, we are. We don't kid ourselves. We know that we are a gourmet item, a different item, probably a little bit more expensive, but really worth it, because flavor and using the tuna in a variety of ways that is not common is what we are aiming for. So we want the consumers to understand that tuna is a very healthy fish. It is a very high protein that that gives so much benefit to your health with the omega-3. It's so easy to digest. So it's not heavy. It's healthy. And you can use it in whatever recipe you use. Chicken, for example, you can use tuna to substitute.
Oh,
and it's from tuna rice, from a tuna tacos. Whenever we go to a trade show, we do tuna tacos, and everybody's like, what? I never imagined doing a taco with a tuna in a jar. Well, there you go. It's easy, it's quick, and it's delicious.
It's delicious. Well, of course, that's what got me, is it's delicious. Are you harassed at all by this sustainability thing? They seem to have, the oceans people seem to be targeting tuna lately for sustainability.
Well, yes, there has been a lot of noise around the tuna industry. And what we do, and because of the profile of company that we are, we do comply with all the sustainability requirements that the different entities are requiring. So we are dolphin safe. We have our albacore product line. It's pollen line caught. We certified that none of the harvesting of the tuna that we are doing, they use any fat, that it's, and the bycatch is completely controlled. So we guarantee, and you can go back into our webpage, and with a number that it's printed on the bottom of the jars and of the cans, you can even track back where the tuna you are eating is coming from.
Well, that's good to know. You know that whatever that organization is, the Oceans, Healthy Oceans or whatever it is called, they had this big international conference, and the Japanese wouldn't go. They weren't going to be subjected to any control over their tuna. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a problem when they are harvesting the ocean, and there are countries that are harvesting more than the FAO allows them to. So that's one thing. The other thing is in Asian places, they use forest manpower, or they don't pay the correct salaries, or they don't pay at all. So that's something that they are looking into. We in Costa Rica, we have our government is pretty protective regarding labor policies. So we comply with everything. We are the main work source for the region where we are at, that is in the coastline of Costa Rica. And we, of course, have a lot of women working with us, and we pay all the wages that the government requires, and we have even more benefits for them so that we can keep, because the thing with tuna, it's that it's a very, very intense in labor.
Uh-huh. It's huge, and I've talked to people who visited some of the Japanese factories where they carve up the tuna for sales and delivery, and it's a big fish to handle. And there's a lot of work involved with it.
Yes, and
right.
It's something that you cannot automize still, because the sizes of the tuna, they are all different.
Uh-huh. Well, you have one fine company. You landed at a good place, Gabriela Jimenez of Tonino. And I'm glad that you took the time to talk to us. All the way from Costa Rica. And if nothing else, I learned that Tonino is not Italian. It's Costa Rica. So I learned that. That was important to know. I always say you've got to learn one new thing every day. And how did I miss that? I don't know. Well, you've been a delight to talk to. And I can't wait to taste that salmon. That's going to be good.
So. I think that you would like it, and I hope that the American consumer will find the new species in a glass jar to be an advantage and something to have in their pantry that will give them health, savory, delicious meals.
I believe it. I believe it will happen, and I look forward to it. Again, thank you, Gabriela Jimenez of Toneno. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
We're going to be talking to Emma Marvin today, listeners, from this very wonderful place called the Butternut Farm, and it's Butternut Mountain Farm. Is that all part of the title, Emma?
It is indeed. Yeah, Butternut Mountain Farm. The company's named for where we're located, which is actually on the side of Butternut Mountain.
Wow. Now, you had an interesting story about finding this location.
Yeah, so as a family, we've been involved in maple syrup for a number of years. My grandfather was a botanist at the University of Vermont and spent his career researching sap flow dynamics in maple trees. And
wow.
During his career, he was really interested in finding a place that he could steward with an eye towards making maple syrup. And he was lucky enough to find a parcel on the side of Butternut Mountain. And I was lucky enough to have a father who was really, really interested in maple, and my dad's interest combined with access to a really good maple resource is how Butternut Mountain Farm started.
And when was that? How old is it?
So my father started the company in 1972.
Okay, very good. And so listeners, in case you missed it, we're talking about Vermont, which is, we interviewed somebody who had bought a property with a party space, and I had this grand idea, which never came to fruition, to invite all the specialty food, artisanal food producers in Vermont to come to this party space and have a grand old time, and we've never managed to do that. It would have been a very crowded event, I'm afraid.
I imagine it would have been.
What was the name the lady in question had a very unusual name, but I've forgotten what it is.
It's one of those hippie names. I can't remember it myself now.
Oh dear.
Well, it was a hippie name. It was. I can't remember. No, it'll probably come back to me when we hang up. But anyhow, she was a cookbook author and a regular author. She did fiction as well. Emma, I've read a million explanations about how you get maple from these trees, and it always sounds like some kind of a fantasy to me. It's real, huh?
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. In making maple syrup, what we're doing is we are harvesting sap from wild-grown maple trees. Typically, they're either red maple or sugar maple. These are trees that are out in the middle of the northern forest. You can find them anywhere from as far west as Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, as far south as Virginia, Kentucky, and then the range extends north up into Canada, Quebec, and New Brunswick. We are taking the sap and collecting it, and then we are concentrating it. It is really amazing. There's so few foods that we get to consume today that are from wild grown plants. Maple is one of them, and you happen to find it in the center of the store. That blows my mind. The fact that these trees we harvest sap from are long lived. We can start harvesting sap when they're about 40 years old. And we can harvest sap for generations. So hundreds of years sap can be harvested from the same trees. And we're really taking just a little part of the stored energy that happens right now during the summer as the trees are taking in the sunlight and going through photosynthesis and storing away that energy. We're taking a little bit of that in the spring as the tree comes back to life for the next growing cycle, and concentrating that sap into syrup, something that is absolutely delicious. It's pretty special.
Well, yeah, it is. And people who buy maple syrup in the supermarket usually get something that's not the real deal, and so have no idea of how luscious the real deal is.
You're absolutely right.
I don't know how that happened. How did they happen to start putting this stuff in bottles?
So for a long time, maple was the sort of easy, inexpensive sweetener of choice. It was what people made at home, and they kept in their root cellars. It's what got folks through when there were sugar rations during the war. But at the turn of the last century, cane sugar became much, much less expensive. And with that change in the cost of cane came a desire to create less expensive imitations of what had become a very common sweetener. And that is really where it started. And I would argue that in spite of all of the technology and the multitude of ingredients that go into products that try to imitate pure maple syrup, none of them have been able to replicate
right.
it in a way that's satisfactory.
You're absolutely right. It's a night and day difference. I mean, the real stuff is. But it is expensive. Is that because there's so much hands-on production?
It is. So when we harvest the sap, it's in a really limited window of time in the spring. We need cold nights, warm days for sap flow to happen. And we are literally going to individual trees. We are tapping them, which means we're drilling a small hole. We're inserting a spout, which is what the system of pipeline is connected to. So that connects the tree to the pipeline system that the sap flows through to gathering tanks, and then down into our sugar houses, which is where we transform the sap into syrup. So that's miles and miles of walking in the woods to tap those trees, to inspect those tubing lines. We think in our own woods we have over 100 miles of tubing lines. And that's all happening in a 6 to 8 week window, usually sometime between mid-February and mid-April. And then it takes a lot of work to transform that sap into syrup. So we start with something that is about 1.5 to 2.5% sugar content. So that's the sweetness coming out of the tree and the sap. And we're taking it up to over 66% Brix. That's about 66% sweetness. So a huge amount of transformation and effort to evaporate out water. We today have some other tools we deploy, most commonly reverse osmosis. That's the same technology that's used in desalination and for water treatment. It's what you might find on boats for potable water. But in our case, we're using it to remove some of the water and concentrate that sap before it goes into the boiling process. And then that boiling process happens on a evaporator, which is a piece of equipment that has a heat source. It might be wood, might be oil, might be electric, might be steam. And on top of that heat source is a set of flat pans in which the sap moves through those pans, and the remaining water is evaporated until we get to just the right density. So there's a tremendous amount of effort that goes into making maple syrup. That is the basis of why it is an expensive sweetener.
You just wonder how anybody first thought of it.
The stories are amazing. So Abenaki lore, there are two versions that I'm familiar with. One is a story of axe that was thrown at a tree, injuring the tree during the spring season, and in pulling out that axe, the sweet sap was flowing, and they tasted it and thought, oh, there's an opportunity there to collect this. Another is a broken twig that had a birch vessel under it overnight, and it collected that birch vessel, collected the sap, and when they cooked down what they were going to cook in that water, they discovered that it was sweet. And so clearly this is a tradition that has been happening in the northern forest long before there were European settlers here.
Yeah, it's been, yeah, I mean, it's ancient, isn't it?
Was it developed by the native Indian population? I mean,
exactly, yeah, and that knowledge
started to happen.
That is exactly how it started to happen.
Right. I've had this funny question. I mean, and I read stories about how they know when the sap's running and this and that. Can you hear anything? I mean, it's such a weird question, I know. But I have this idea that when the sap starts running, there might be some kind of an almost subliminal sound to it. Is it true?
I wish there were a subliminal sound to it. I think the thing that's amazing about maple is that there's so little indication of when the season is going to start. Because we're talking about a product in talking about the sap that flows beneath the bark of the tree. So it's different than other agricultural food products that grow where you have a fruit that develops or a flower or you're harvesting the whole plant so you have germination. And for us, we're trying to predict when is this fluid going to start moving underneath the sap in a way that we can start to collect it. So the best indicator we actually have is the temperature. And so every sugar maker is tied to their weather app on their phone now. And as you guys both know, the weathermen are, depending on what regions of the country you live in, are not always incredibly accurate about what's going to happen the next day or the next 10 days. And so there is a lot of mystery to maple. And when the season is going to start is one of them.
Weather reports are not that accurate, to tell you the truth.
Included in the samples that you were kind enough to send to us, there was another maple-like product, I guess, is the way I would describe it. Sort of like a sweet bar. It contains crystal. What I can best describe
it's candy.
It's maple candy.
Maple syrup.
Yeah, that is exactly what it is. So going back to sort of the origins of maple, maple syrup is a liquid. It needs to be refrigerated once the package is opened. And refrigeration isn't something that's been around for as long as maple syrup's been around, nor has the kind of packaging that we put maple syrup into been around as long as maple syrup's been around. So maple syrup was originally cooked down into a solid sugar form. And European settlers did that by actually making it into a maple bar and putting it in a form, making it kind of a cake.
So you're doing something that people had been doing for a long time before.
Exactly. So maple candy is a softer derivation of that. And it is, that's all that is in it is pure maple syrup. And what we're doing is heating it up and then controlling the crystallization process and putting it into some molds, letting it take shape.
Funny,
and then there you've got a delicious treat.
Now, when I get one out of the package and put it in my mouth and start consuming it, I feel really guilty. I feel like at some point in the future it's perfectly possible that my teeth will rot and fall out.
Two comments on this.
Because
what,
this delectable substance, it's really something special.
It is an incredible treat. I have two girls, and I joked with them when they were little, a piece of maple candy a day keeps the doctor away. Well, I'm not sure the truth in that. The reality is that delicious as maple candy is, it's hard to consume in large quantities. It is very sweet. So it will certainly sate the sweet tooth.
Now, how many products do you make? We know you get the syrup and the sugar, and we know you make it into the syrup, and you make some candies. Are there a lot of differences, nuances of flavor, like from terroir or the geographical locations or anything?
There is quite a bit of variation in maple syrup, and a lot of it goes back to the weather conditions under which the sap is harvested. Some of it can be terroir related, though that is usually masked by whatever is happening in terms of weather conditions. So in maple syrup, you'll find that it's classified into groupings based on color and flavor. So there is golden delicate, which is truly the lightest syrup produced, has incredibly subtle flavors, often has a buttery kind of sense to it, maybe a little bit of vanilla, really good on like crepes or over vanilla ice cream. The next category is called amber rich. And I would say that this is the most quintessential flavor profile for pure maple syrup because maple is the most prominent flavor that comes through. And it can be used in anything on yogurt, over pancakes, waffles, French toast, as a sweetener. You can use it in myriad ways. And then the next category is dark robust. So this is moving into darker color on that still amber spectrum, and stronger flavor holds up against flavors of buckwheat, oatmeal, really good in baking where you want that maple flavor to come through. There is one other category that you'll find occasionally, which is called very dark strong. It's not produced in large quantities and tends to be produced only at the end of the season. And the reason it's not produced in large quantities is it's really hard to make without having other flavors come into it that just are predominant and not acceptable for retail sale.
Now, here's a question for you. Have bartenders discovered it yet?
I don't think they've discovered it enough yet. In my house, it is the perfect substitute for simple syrup.
Okay.
And I always, in my house, I always have maple syrup handy, so I never find a need for simple syrup. I simply substitute. But maple has an amazing ability to pair with other flavors. Out there in the market, infused syrups is something we do a little bit of, and one of the infused flavors that's incredibly popular with maple is when maple syrup has been aged in bourbon barrels. There is just such a beautiful synergy between those, the maple flavor and bourbon flavor. They just play so nicely together.
Well, that sounds good, actually.
a maple old-fashioned is a phenomenal drink.
Oh, that's a good thought. Let's hear it for that. When we got a thermos thing. Now, was that in the same box as the Vermont products, or is that for somebody else? Hello?
Oh, I'm here. I'm sorry. I'm not sure. I am actually not completely sure.
I'm just looking at the list here. That came with a Taste of Vermont crate.
Yep. So that is really neat because that really gives a visual sense and then the opportunity to taste all of those different classes of maple syrup. You really can see and taste the difference in that Taste of Vermont crate because there's one of each of the classes of syrup.
Well, here is a... A 12-ounce BMF PET bottle.
So this is our Butternut Mountain Farm squeeze bottle, and I am so excited about this. I think it is in this conversation, I'm a little hesitant, but I feel like it is like the sliced bread of maple syrup. So if artisanal bakeries have figured out how to slice artisanal bread and still keep it artisanal, that is what this package is. Because maple syrup, what are the biggest problems we all have when we use maple syrup? The package gets sticky, the cap gets crusty, it might stick to your fridge shelf because you didn't wipe it before you put it away. And you go to pour it out and you get like three times as much as you actually wanted on your pancakes. Why I am so excited about this is a plastic bottle that has enough flexibility in it that we can use a silicone valve cap. And when I say silicone valve cap, what I mean is like think ketchup cap, which means you have controlled dispensing and no mess when you pour it out. I'm a pretty high-level consumer of maple syrup. Didn't think it was possible to eat more than I was, and I will say that this package has made maple syrup even more accessible to me because it's so easy. It's easier to grab that out of my fridge than to go get a sugar bowl. We actually keep four of them in our fridge at home because we go through so much maple syrup, but it's really changed how we use maple in our own lives.
And your teeth haven't fallen out yet?
Not yet. Not yet.
Now, we've talked about how wonderful this product is. And the colorful surrounding of the business in this location. And the magic of the product. So how do people get a hold of it? Where do they find your product?
Yeah, so we're really lucky to work with some really great retailers. We have a number of folks here in Vermont. If you're traveling through the state where you are likely to find our product, if you're not able to be in Vermont, we can be found at Whole Foods Market. And that is probably the most reliable place where we can be found.
Well, that everybody has one of those now, so that's easy. Yeah, and do you have a store founder on your website?
We do not have a product locator, but our product is also on Amazon, and we actually have our own small retail establishment in Johnson, which is the town where our home farm is, where you can order a product directly from. It's called Marvin's Country Store.
Could you spell that out?
Yep, it's Marvins, and then Country Store, CountrySTore.
Is it a .com? Or?
It's the .com, yep.
Great. Well, it's been a delight sampling this product. It's called one of those things, never go back, because once you taste the real stuff, you never could tolerate that sweet goop that they're selling, supposedly.
Indeed. Well, yeah. I really appreciate your time and the opportunity to chat with you all about what we do here at Butternut Mountain Farm.
Okay, listeners, remember, Butternut Mountain Farm. And Emma, Marvin, keep up the good work, and I'm happy that you've found this perfect container for yourself.
Me too. Thank you both so much.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.